a film with three brains. It's 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 a film with three brains.
Oh my god, you guys are freaks.
Don't you wish you were Arthur?
Would the more attractive of you please step forward?
It's gonna cost you $100.
Let's make it $200, but I will ask you to Simonize my car.
How rich are you?
I wish I had a dime for every dime I have.
Anticipating your condition, and I brought you orange juice, coffee, and aspirins, or do you need to throw up? Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature.
I take it this bum will be calling you.
Dad, he's a millionaire.
You have my permission to marry him.
Are you a hooker? I forgot. I just thought I was doing great with you.
Will you take my hand?
That would leave you with one.
Dudley Moore is Arthur.
You or me? I know I do.
Don't you wish you were Arthur? Arthur, the most fun money can buy. An Orion Pictures release through Warner Brothers.
Welcome to the Film with Three Brains. Yeah, it's down in San Francisco.
Can I go right now or do I gotta pause like that? Oh, no, okay. I'm Sean in Chicago.
Dramatic.
And this is Cohen. In Maplewood, New Jersey.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
Shiver me timbers.
Yeah, it's almost a pirate movie. Where we're seeing Arthur.
It's Arthur.
Arthur from 1981. yes.
Picking up on the hidden themes in this movie.
It's
what movie?
Arthur. The comedy about a billionaire playboy pirate. Must marry a landlubber he doesn't love, or else he'll be cut off of his gold fortune. Anyway, yeah. You guys remember this movie? Seen it before?
I don't remember. I didn't remember it. I'd seen it. I know I've seen it, and I remembered very little, only that it was Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli, and even only the roughest of plot points. I couldn't even remember. I knew it involved money. That's yeah. About it. A lot of money he was going to lose. I didn't remember why or how. I couldn't remember the context or the circumstances at all.
Yeah, I remember watching it as a kid and being confused, and I thought some of that would get cleared up, but... No, I don't know how much got clear.
What's
no,
odd is I've seen the remake too, and I still couldn't remember what the plot was.
Oh, really? Yeah. With that schmuck, what's his name?
Russell Brand. Yeah.
Was it? I'm assuming it wasn't great.
I don't think so. I don't remember it at all.
Okay.
I just remember. I vaguely recall thinking, well, that was kind of dumb. And I remember, you know, because I really like him in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. But
yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's the only thing he's capable of doing in a movie is that character because
yeah, he
was terrible.
Himself.
He was terrible. All I remember about Arthur, the remake, is that he was terrible.
Yeah. What do you think of Dudley Moore?
Yeah. I don't like Dudley Moore.
Apparently.
Is it the you don't like Dudley Moore or you don't like the British humor?
I love British humor. I don't like drunk Dudley Moore. I find it irritating. You know, his drunk spiel to me was just cartoony and just off-putting. Because the rest of the movie isn't like that. And in the rest of the movie, he's not like that. And I understand that he's drunk and, you know, your personality is a bit different when you're drunk. But it was just so fucking annoying.
Yeah, you know,
his jokes and then the cackling, the never-ending cackling at his own jokes is just so off-putting. And I don't think the character's meant to be off-putting at all. And so, in the scenes where he's drunk, I hated every fucking second of it. But in the scenes where he's not, it was fine. And in fact, everyone else I think is really great. And the movie itself is quite good. And I think if they would have cast anyone else, I would have liked it 100% more.
Well, that's interesting because they did think of quite a few other people like James Caan, Al Pacino, John Travolta, John Belushi.
I mean, John Belushi is definitely an obvious choice.
It says he didn't want to be typecast.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable.
Travolta said no. Caan and Pacino were not really interested. And that's when it switched from Paramount to Orion, and Orion brought Dudley Moore on.
Does anyone feel similarly? Did you guys like Dudley Moore?
Well, the reason I bring up the other casting is that I couldn't see someone. I think that the only redeeming quality of his character, other than being amusing and funny, sort of, you know, is that he's likable. You know, like he's like the people that work for him like him. You know, they find him pretty agreeable. Yeah, he's a pain in the ass. Yeah, he's a drunk. Yeah, he does stupid stuff, but they like him. Mm-hmm. Or in Hobson's case, they love him. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't work as well with a James Caan or Al Pacino or some crap like that. Like that doesn't make, they would have made a different movie, I think.
I mean, I agree. Dudley Moore has a childlike quality about him that's probably necessary for the role, but I just feel like maybe someone else I don't hate has that quality too.
Cause you know, but I mean, he's got a strike against him for being a billionaire. Like you already, like as an audience member, he's drunk and he's a billionaire. Like, oh, what the hell? What is this? And then, I mean, I'm not saying only Dudley Moore could do this because obviously that's not true, but somebody like him, I think, was necessary for me. And then we can get into the other casting, but Liza Minnelli is a whole another ball of wax. I like her. I think she's a good comedian and that stuff. I don't know how much chemistry they actually have or if I even care about chemistry in this movie, but...
Yeah, it was all right. I thought their chemistry was okay. It wasn't like... electric, you know, but it was, right. I don't think it was bad. I like Liza Minnelli. I thought she was pretty funny. She's got good timing. She's funny.
Yeah. Like her and.
Somehow she pulls off just like a regular person, which seems incredible to me. I don't know, just because it's like Liza Minnelli. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she does it. And I was impressed. I was like, oh, she does like regular person well. Because some people don't. Like Tom Cruise does not do regular people, you know, like War of the Worlds, where he's supposed to be a dock worker in New Jersey. No, that's fucking Tom Cruise. Yeah. But I feel like she pulled it off pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with your, the whole, like, he's really drunk all the time.
Yeah.
It's grating. But I also think it's supposed to be. I think they softened it. He doesn't get totally drunk until the end again. Well, I can't really say that.
That's a whole other thing. That
how did he get so suddenly drunk?
I just fundamentally disagree with the choice of having his character drunk for the last half hour of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Which totally undercuts all the, like, whatever maturity he had gained and whatever his arc was is destroyed. All the decisions he makes are suspect. And you can't help but question whether any of it's authentic. And it like crushes the movie for me. Just destroys everything that came before it. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I'm like, I thought when they first showed him that he was drunk, I thought someone's going to do like a classic movie move where they're like, all right, come with me. You get the coffee on. Here's a loaf of bread, you know, or whatever. Like, sober up.
There's no
up.
Intervention. There's no sober AA up. Rehab.
And then, you know, and miraculously, the main character would go from stinking drunk to sober in 10 minutes. And then the movie would continue. And it just kept going. I was like, oh, my God, this feels so wrong for the character, for the story, for all of it.
You know? Well, maybe some people actually haven't seen this. Sam, do you want to do a little summary for us? Or
I think you...
Or should we just...
If they can't put it together...
I mean, it's not a huge plot. It's not... It's
I
not
mean, I did plot. I did say that he was the alcoholic playboy pirate who has to marry the landlubber lady. To secure his inheritance, he's supposed to marry the right person in society, you know, two wealthy families together, But he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to marry that woman.
Yeah, and he doesn't love
Susan.
So
then it's a very, you know, very classic trope of that he falls in love with the woman with no money and wants to marry for love and not riches, which is pretty much usually the genders turned around and it's a princess in a Disney movie or something. Oh, but
I hadn't thought of that, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've seen this before. He is the drunk thing at the beginning, I thought was important to show like just how childish and how coddled this guy is. But I totally agree that when he learned how to be an adult, that the drinking should have stopped.
Yeah.
And otherwise you're just like, what's the point? Like, and because it also ruins like not only, you know, you talked about it ruining his arc, but it also ruins like, is this woman really going to love someone who is so incapable of, you know, being sober? You know, like, are you really going to fall in love with someone who, just because he has money? Like, that's not the like feel good message we really want to leave the theater with, you know? Like, could it happen? Sure. You know, but that's not what we want. We want it to be, you know, a real success.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right that you needed him to be obnoxious in the beginning. I think it's interesting that that Dudley Moore said it was hard for those. He said those scenes in the beginning of me were laughing were something else to do. Getting the laughter out of myself was a problem. So it feels a little forced. And he admits that like he, like, you know, he's sort of laughing already before he tells a joke, you know, he's like laughing. Yeah. And it feels forced. I mean, it's fine because he's drunk and he doesn't care and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if it didn't come naturally for him as an actor, then, you know, it's not going to help the character that much. But yeah, I think the choices he, like, he's still, I don't know, he's still agreeable. He's brings a prostitute to a nice restaurant and brings her home and whatever. That's fine. It's America. You do what you want. It's your money. you know, he's not cheating on anybody. He's not, at least at that point, that's the weird part too. Like where does Susan I know it's an arranged marriage by their families, you know, there's business involved or whatever, but like in society, he's been seeing her, right? I don't know if they're courting or dating or what the hell has happened, but maybe they're just acquaintances so far. Like, cause until they have that dinner and he sort of does this half-ass proposal, like we don't see them together at all. So I was just curious, like, how were they so sure? Or how is he, like, in the beginning of the movie, he's like, I'm going to get engaged, or I'm, you know, I'm about to be engaged or something. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Well, so then you are cheating on her, or you're not a couple yet. I don't think it's that big a deal, honestly. And Susan says in that dinner, she's like, yeah, I don't care. You can, I'm, you know, this is perfect for you. You can just be drunk and I'm, you know, I'm Teflon. I can take it. I can take all this shit. But she doesn't say specifically go cheat on me or something, but other people do. Doesn't Hobson or somebody say like,
yeah,
kind of suggest like you should have a mistress, like, or maybe it's his grandmother. Right.
No, the grandma says that.
Your grandma says it. Okay.
Yeah.
So these are pretty forward thinking aristocratic people, you know, they're like, okay, you know, high society. We're not always faithful to our betrothed, I guess. I don't know. I just assumed it was sort of like to help him make this decision, like, hey, you can have your cake and eat it too. Just do what your dad and Susan and his dad want. And his grandmother, of course, who is holding the purse strings of $750 million. It would have been good to know that she was so important before the very end of the movie. I think.
Well, she is the one he has the conversation with.
Yeah.
Where she tells him to have a mistress.
Right. And she's really like wants to see him succeed and be happy and all that stuff. But I didn't, it wasn't clear, like, what his dad, I mean, his dad seems to ignore him pretty much. He was raised by his butler, Hobson, more or less. But the expectations, there's only one expectation in his whole life. It's that, okay, you must marry who we want you to marry. The rest, you can do whatever you want. You can have toy trains and shit, and we don't care. So it's interesting. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's not that deep a movie. It's not like it's...
Not at all.
You know. I think it's interesting that it does... That it's fairly entertaining for such a basic, tired plot.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I came away with this with. I was like, oh, you know, because I feel like... Today, to be a good comedy, it has to have so many more layers. And, you know, I think that it feels like watching these, you know, late 70s, early 80s comedies, that you could get away with just having, like, you know, some jokes and you know, a goofy plot line. Like, it didn't feel like you don't need to worry about character development and a lot of these things. It's just people get in a silly situation and see what happens. Like, you know, I feel like a lot of Steve Martin movies or the Bill Murray movies, you know, that it's just like, well, let's just throw people in a goofy situation and they crack some jokes and some funny stuff happens and that's it. And then it wraps up nicely. whereas I feel like now it would be like, you know, this would be a made-for-TV movie sort of thing. Of course, I guess everything's made for TV. No one's making movies for movies anymore. it was simplistic, but it worked enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't.
I know it sounded like I was shitting all over it, which I kind of am.
You were.
I still rather enjoyed it. Everything except drunk him and the choice to have him drunk at the end.
Well, I was thinking about something you said long time ago, which is that you are so sick of the old boy or the, you know, the man child that needs to grow up. Do you think that this gets a pass a little bit because it's a slightly different situation because the money and
I would say it gets a pass just for the year it came out.
Okay.
Meaning it predates most of the, you know, most of the movies I would be considering, you know, that I'm tired of because they all pretty much came out after this.
Before rom-coms were popular, really.
Yeah, but just, I mean, rom-coms have been around forever, but just, you know, the Arrested Development, adolescent, adult horseshit, you know, has been done to death at this point.
Does he even have an arc? I mean, he's sort of...
He does.
He does, right?
He would. If they had chosen not to have him drunk for the whole last half hour, I think he would have had a very well-defined, reasonable... you know, natural arc where he does get together with Liza Minnelli. He sort of, you know, comes to grips with the fact that Hobson is essentially his father, you know, de facto father, things of that nature. Like their relationship was very interesting and John Gielgud's great. His performance is fantastic. I mean, he won an Oscar for it.
He didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
It says What did he say? He
turned it down like three times.
each time he thought it was a rather smutty and a vulgar little film, so I refused it. But each time they asked me, they doubled my salary, so naturally I became reconciled to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was great. And that was part of Dudley Moore's choice, too. He pushed for him.
Yeah.
And that solved a nice little problem of his accent, too. Because Dudley Moore, I guess they want. Steve Gordon wanted Dudley to do an American accent, and he's having a lot of trouble with it. And he just basically said, "Can I just not do it? You know, let me just do this." And then somewhere it said something about like, "Oh, well, it kind of makes sense that, you know, if he was raised by Hobson, he could have more of an English accent. His dad wasn't around." I was like, "Yeah, good enough.
Works." Ish.
Yeah, I don't want to hear
doesn't matter,
it.
Yeah.
Dudley Moore do an American accent.
Yeah, it's not that important.
That guy's British as crumpets. I mean, come on.
It's a little subtle, but I like that Dudley Moore treats all the staff like normal people, and if you notice that almost no one else does, throughout the movie, you know, so it's not only is he have this endearing quality of you know the childness that you're sick of, but also just this, you know, kindness, like this regular person sort of thing. Do you think Robin Williams could have done this?
I think he's capable of it. The question is, could he exercise enough restraint to not sort of ruin it? You know, to have a clear distinction between the drunk version and the sober version, you know.
Right. that first scene when he's in the restaurant, I mean, the only thing he does is he's really loud and obnoxious, but he doesn't like play with anybody's food or like you can see Robin Williams kind of riffing on that and just going crazy in the restaurant scene. And I didn't want to see that. I was just like, well, they would throw him out. Even somebody with a lot of money, they would still be like, sir, can you come on?
Right. Right. Yeah. That's, I mean, Robin Williams, he's done movies where he, you know, does restraint. He's, you know, Good Will Hunting and Dead Poets Society come to mind, which are more, you know, dramatic than this necessarily is. But when he does comedy, it tends to get pretty broad, you know. And and usually it's good. But I think in this, I don't know. I just don't think he would have been right, unless he could really like really rein it in. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I kept picturing like a like Bill Murray for some reason, like a young Bill Murray. Younger.
Yeah, I mean, charming and
weird. But he'd have to ease off the... Because, you know, Bill Murray has his Bill Murray thing where he's kind of a dick. And it's really hard for him to shed. I don't know if he's ever done it.
Oh, you mean in his character?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And like all his movies, he always has that sort of like... He's got a dickishness about him. You know? And it's not necessarily off-putting. It's not necessarily negative, but I don't think it works in this character. I just thought if he could shed that, it'd be interesting.
I'll push back a little bit. He doesn't have that in Lost in Translation.
Oh, you don't think so?
No.
I think a little bit.
Other than the fact that he's cheating on his wife.
It's like, I think in Lost in Translation, it comes up. What he doesn't
he's very
have
depressed.
Is what he, okay. Let me reword it. He doesn't have any naivete about him.
Right? Okay. All right.
There's nothing childlike about him in any of his performances ever. Even when he's being childish. If that makes any sense.
I think I get it. Yeah. Even though he's like in Rushmore, he's very childishly fighting with Jason Schwartzman. He's still, you know, a business
right
owner.
There's no innocence there.
Yeah, right, there's no innocence.
Like Bill Murray's been 40 his whole life.
You know? Maybe 50
or 50, yeah. You know, every role he plays an old man, even when he was young. Basically, you know.
Okay, so you kind of agree
he's salty.
I would say you probably are thinking similar to me that Dudley Moore is a good choice because of his little sweet, cuteness.
For the most part, I wish his sort of performance whilst drunk was a little more nuanced and less just annoying and loud.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just me. Maybe him playing drunk is just pushes my buttons and it drives me fucking crazy. I don't know.
I vaguely remember thinking I didn't like it when I was a kid, but I also didn't like the movie because I didn't understand any of it. But... Right. But I also thought, like, you know, I understood that he was doing the wrong things and he needed to straighten up and that, you know, the basics aren't that hard to grasp. I feel like that he's, I mean, I like how he plays piano. He just has other, you know, features he can bring to to the character. But I still don't know that he knows who the character is other than rich and drunk, you know. Feel like he could have found something else. I don't know what else has he done. I mean, I don't know much about Dudley Moore except for Best Defense and Lady in Red or something, you know.
Yeah, I haven't seen many of his movies either. Like Crazy People, I've seen.
Oh yeah, Crazy People. I like that one actually.
Not Lady in Red.
Not Lady in Red.
That's Willy Wonka.
That's oh, Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Thank you. Yeah, Crazy People. He can play a very Dudley Moore type of character. It's funny and goofy and completely naive and unworldly. But he's not. I mean, he's. So the point is, he's never had to grow up, so he doesn't grow up. Part of my confusion, again, was when he's taking care of Hobson in hospice or something. You know, I don't even know if, do we know what he's dying of? Cancer? He doesn't say. Whatever, he's dying. And then they have that great scene together where Hobson calls. He says, you're a good son. He can't even look at him, but he says it. And then the next thing you know, he's closing the door and weeks have passed. Because they say, I think he says, he goes to that bar and then he says what he's been sober all this time until today. So you have to piece together that, oh, wait, I mean, it was like this most underwhelming death I've ever seen. Like, not that I wanted to see him die. I just wanted some acknowledgement, like him looking at the empty bed. You know, it could have been so easy to, it's why are they like saving this for later to explain, you know, what he's been doing this past month, you know?
Yeah.
I would just like to, and for his character, for Hobson's character, I would have liked to have seen his, not his dying moment, but just like, okay, this is the end, you know, I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter that much. I can't believe they had four different endings in mind. I can't even imagine what they are. I think go ahead. Do you know?
Well, I don't know the other endings, but I would like to see the stuff that we didn't see. I mean, they said that he kept cracking up, you know, he kept ad-libbing and making so many jokes that they had to do multiple takes, that people were getting, you know, the people got mad, or one scene took 27 takes because he just wouldn't stop making jokes about the moose. So that's, I'm like, I want to see that.
Yeah, I like the moose jokes, actually. Yeah, I liked him being around the father, or like being in that stuffy environment and being a goof, like making those jokes and knowing and people not like just staring at him and not laughing at him. I love that too. Like, that's great. Yeah.
Well, he does it. He's got this like nervousness to him. Like he knows he doesn't belong, and he's trying to like offset it with these bad jokes. Like, which, yeah, I thought was really well done. I think you know, if I were going to remake this movie, which someone already did, I think that he plays the piano and cracks jokes, and you know, to have the Liza Minnelli character say, you know, why don't you do that? Like, why don't you seem to have a lot of fun doing that? And be like, well, there's no money in doing that. And she'll be like, well, you don't need money. Just go, you know, have a job where you have fun, you know, like it makes you happy. You know, that would have been like, oh, you know, she sees in him what he needs, and he sees a way out of the life that he's in. Like, he can still keep the money at the end and all that. But it would have really helped that development, I think, to have something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, they need. I just think they need more courtship somehow, because I'm fine with their little meeting of her stealing a tie and him covering for her. I like that because he's intrigued about her. But you know, there's not much else. There's, you know, they've met and then they hang out a bit, and yeah, she knows that he has a lot of money, and her dad loves that. Seinfeld's dad. What is it? What's the actor's name?
Whatever.
Yeah. But she doesn't. I mean, what else? Does, like, I mean, it's good that she's funny. I think that is like the best example of the nature of their relationship. Like, oh, she's funny, he's funny. They would get along. I can see their relationship working in that way. But beyond that, like, there's not, you know, there's no big scene of either of them falling in love with each other. It's sort of just, yeah, I like her. And Hobson's like, you really seem to like her. And he's like, yeah, I do. Which is fine. There's, you know, I don't need plot points, every single plot point for, again, that's more rom-com stuff. Like, that's typically what we expect now. We'd expect a best friend character, you know.
Yeah.
All that extra stuff that they usually have now. So I'm kind of glad they don't have all that fat to cut away. Straightforward movie.
Indeed.
Yep. Very straightforward. I felt like some of his jokes and all that totally reminded me of Austin Powers.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember half his jokes. They're so quick.
Hobson's jokes are good too.
Yeah, Hobson.
Yeah, yeah, he was great.
Sharp tongued.
Yeah. Yeah, he's giving him shit the whole time. It's really nicely. Oh man. So yeah, we just did Laurence Olivier and now we got John Gielgud. You said he won an Oscar for this?
Yeah, I think so.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It was nominated for a bunch of Oscars, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Kind of surprising. It won Best Original Song, Best Supporting Actor, where the it was nominated for Best Leading Actor, which is so rare for a comedy.
Yeah.
Best Leading Actor, Best Screenplay was another. Got a bunch of Golden Globes. He won the Golden Globe for Best Actor. And Best Supporting Actor, they won. Best Song, they won. She was nominated for Best Actress for Golden Globes. And it won Best Motion Picture Comedy Golden Globe. So it did pretty well.
Yeah.
People liked it. It was what they needed at the time. At the time.
It wasn't like the fourth highest grossing movie of 1981.
It was.
Wow.
So much so that they made a sequel that we won't even talk about.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about it.
I'm pretty sure I saw that at some point, but I couldn't tell you anything about it.
I read the description and it sounded like they just did the same thing. Because like exactly the same thing. Like they have a kid. And then the family still wants him to back out and marry Susan. You know,
what?
The same shit. Like, okay.
Oh my god.
You couldn't think of anything new?
So it's Weekend at Bernie's too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or Home Alone 2, which some people actually like.
Well, at least it changed the
the city.
The location ever so slightly. Although it's still a house in a different city.
I don't remember a single thing about Home Alone 2.
It's
Donald Trump's in it.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that the studio didn't know how to promote the movie. They couldn't figure out an ad campaign. They had like six. They had abandoned six different ad campaigns before they went with the one of him with a martini behind the wheel of the Rolls Royce. I didn't look up the poster or anything, but yeah, they had no feel for where the audience was. If you, this is the producer Jaffe, I think, I don't know. If you had called me 4 weeks before Arthur opened it and asked me who was going to see the film, I couldn't have answered.
Yeah.
I guess, but it had a positive word of mouth, and it actually did better in its third week than its second week, so it started, like, picking up.
Yeah, that doesn't happen much anymore.
No.
No, they don't give them a chance.
Do they assume that word of mouth happens faster online, or?
I think there's so many releases. I think there's you don't make your money in the first 2 weeks, that's it. Or you don't have...
Maybe they have too many predictions, you know, projections for, oh, if it didn't make X number of dollars, it has to have, you know, a quarter of its budget in the first week or two, and then... I'm sure there's some math they're doing, but...
Yeah.
That's too bad. I miss word of mouth.
Sure.
Like, when we were kids, that's all that mattered was word of mouth.
Yep.
Because there was no internet.
And there was sneak previews on, like, Saturday morning with Roger Ebert and...
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And what's his name?
Gene Siskel?
Yeah. And then there was the other guy with the crazy mustache. He had a show, too. I forgot what it was called.
Oh, Gene?
Yeah. Yeah. What's his name?
Something with it. Kill it.
Shallot.
Shallot.
There you go. Shallot.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, so people actually listen to other people to hear about these movies.
Yep.
I mean, you...
Kind of like our podcast, except no one listens to it.
Touche.
That's right.
Now, Cohen, you mentioned that you looked at the papers, but you probably just looked at the descriptions, right? You weren't like, well, I don't know. Maybe you did read full reviews and stuff.
No, not really. I mean, you mean when we were kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Kenosha News had their like entertainment section. Mm-hmm. And they had someone who would review movies, and I'd read that sometimes, but I don't know. It didn't really matter.
Just get a sense of the movie or something?
It didn't really matter. If I saw a trailer and I thought I wanted to see it, I'd just go see it. I didn't care what anyone else thought.
Really?
As you may have guessed.
You changed so much.
You not only didn't care what other people thought, you would con everyone into going with you.
This is true. We are living proof of that.
Yeah. Yep. But I was usually right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't think statistically you had a chance, because if you see every movie at the theater, it's going to be some duds.
Indeed. That's a good point.
No, I always appreciated your enthusiasm for movies. Thanks. I didn't always appreciate your pick, but your enthusiasm was always great.
Yes. You know what the problem is you sell movies, it's like, oh, it's going to be awesome. What you should have been selling it as is, it's going to be better than sitting home.
Doing nothing, yeah.
There will be popcorn.
I did like the double up in this movie. You guys noticed Paul Gleason.
Yeah.
In the office.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
All I can think of is, I hope that's not a hostage. Every time I see
that guy. Also, see someone who says we're going to need a couple more FBI guys?
Yeah, we're going to need more FBI guys.
Yeah.
It's still exploding in the air.
Yeah, he's great.
All right, what are we doing next?
Wait a second. We got to at least mention Burt Bacharach. And before there was Chris Cross to make you jump, there was a guy named Christopher Cross. And he was apparently not trusted to do the whole film, so they had Burt Bacharach come in and help him. But what I thought was interesting, of course, we all know the big song.
Mm-hmm.
The best lyric, "When You Get Caught Between the New Moon and New York City," was actually written by Peter Allen, Liza Minnelli's ex-husband.
Hmm.
So there was like four of them that worked on that song. But the chorus.
That seems weird that it takes four dudes to write, or four people to write a song.
It probably didn't. I mean, there's... I think it was mostly Christopher Cross and Burt Bacharach, but yeah. Oh yeah. It says Peter and Carol came up with the words, Burt and I put the music together. So it was really like two and two.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Now I wonder, do you know where this song comes in terms of sailing? Like, I'm curious. I'm just curious if yacht rock was a genre yet when this song
came out. '70s.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, so it probably was then. Yeah.
Ride Like the Wind.
Yeah.
I think I remember liking Ride Like the Wind.
The Sailing album was 1979.
There we go. Thank you.
So yeah, listeners, if you're not aware, Christopher Cross is basically credited with creating yacht rock.
He's starting with sailing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a nice voice that has like no pretense. Like there, it's very, I don't know. We don't have to go down this road, but it's not something you hear as much these days. There's no attitude to his voice. There's no attitude to his music. It's kind of like Kenny Loggins.
What about John Legend? Even
John Legend and Kenny Loggins will put a little more oomph into it now and then. You know, they'll scream a little bit.
Kenny Loggins has got some stank here and there.
Yeah, that's what I was about to correct myself. Yeah, I think Kenny Loggins can do it.
He puts a little stank on it.
He gets stanky in the danger zone. Yeah,
that's usually how a lot of people describe Kenny Loggins. He's kind of like Christopher Cross with a little bit of stank.
A little bit of stank.
Heard it here first.
I'm pretty sure that's like the Spotify thing about the artist. That's where you're reading that, right?
He still gets stank royalties. All right. I think we're done.
Are we done?
I think we're done.
We're done. So who's is my pick?
It is your pick.
Unless you want me to pick again.
No, it's all right.
Yeah, I'll pick a movie that's better than the one you'll pick.
It's very difficult for me to sort of clue you in on what I'm picking.
Are you going back to 1988?
Well,
your last pick was 85.
So I'm going to pick my first ever companion piece.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
It's not that interesting.
That's a good clue.
Like a Predator 2 or?
Sort of. And so, but my companion piece, the companion that's been picked already was my last pick.
Oh, shit.
So this current pick is a companion.
Office Space?
Commando.
Yeah, that goes with Commando.
Oh, wait, no. Commando was your pick.
Yes.
Not Office Space. Oh, boy.
Well, okay. So.
Okay. I'm going to pray that your companion.
I'm praying too.
You're going to pray that my fan piece is.
I'm praying it does not take place in a Washington, D.C. airport.
It does not.
No. Okay. No. See, this is my thought. That your companion piece, I'm afraid, is going to be some Arnold piece of crap movie like Red Sonja.
No.
But my dream is that your companion piece is the piece that, you know, we were talking about the Stallone-Schwarzenegger battle. So I'm thinking you're going Stallone as your companion piece.
You're on the right track.
And I'm praying that it's Rambo, because Rambo was the precursor that was much better than this. Instead of... And he's laughing because I'm wrong.
No, instead of what?
Instead of one of
the later ones?
His later movies, like Tango and Cash.
Well, he's going to pick Tango and Cash.
You're
going to
speak ill of Tango and Cash?
I know he's going to pick Tango and Cash.
I'm not. Someday I am. Not now. No, okay. You're right. It was mentioned while we were discussing Commando about their rivalry, and in the same year as Commando. Oh. Stallone's film came out.
Yeah, but it wasn't Rambo. Rambo was earlier, right?
No, it was. It was Rambo Cobra? First Blood Part 2.
Oh, God.
That's what we're doing?
Yes.
Wow,
you're
shit.
Skipping the first one.
I'm jumping right to the sequel.
I thought we had a gentleman's agreement about this.
About what?
About picking sequels before picking the first one.
No. I lied.
You got us again.
Yeah, so 1985.
So it was Rambo.
It's Rambo.
It's the Rambo
Part 2.
You wanted it to be
you
First
wanted
Blood.
First Blood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted First Blood.
That's not really a companion piece to Commando, though.
No.
First Blood's like a real movie.
First,
which is why I thought it would be a good pick.
Well, here, listeners.
It is one man versus.
Here's my recommendation. Watch First Blood, then Rambo First Blood Part 2. But if you have neither the time nor inclination, Rambo First Blood Part 2 stands alone quite fine on its own.
Well,
we'll provide a little context and backstory.
I think the parallel between the two is a lot closer than with First Blood.
Oh, absolutely. They came out the same year. They were
in heated battle.
But even just...
And the over-the-top nature of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one-man army nature of it. And
the hyperbole.
Taking a giant machine gun and carrying it in one hand and mowing everybody down.
Well, we have done UHF, so, you know, we've got some point of reference.
The obvious companion.
So, in case anyone out there is confused, our pick for next time is Rambo First Blood Part 2 from 1985, starring Sylvester Stallone.
Can we watch it anywhere?
Oh, good question.
Service wise? Let's
see. Where
Rambo First Blood.
Rambo.
So, basically, you're doubling down. So, you took Commando, and, you know, we were pretty agreeable. I mean, it is a very fun movie. I was on my best behavior, I think. But two in a row, I all bets are off. I might take the kid gloves off.
I think it might be on Max. Hard to say because Real Good claims it's on Cinemax, but Cinemax doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Right.
So
I've seen on Philo, whatever the hell that is.
I mean, really, everyone should probably just buy it.
I think it's a
I mean, we'll cover it later, but this movie made $300 million at the box office.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
As well it should.
It's on Amazon Prime.
I think I've seen it once.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen it back.
I've seen the First Blood a number of times.
Yeah, I've seen it more.
I do not remember. I barely remember anything except for the bandana. But anyway, it's $3.79 on Prime, and it's free on Philo if you have a subscription.
That is not free.
Right.
Cool. All right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you're welcome.
Yeah. We're nothing if not unpredictable. I thought you would have gone away from that whole scene for a little while and then come back to it.
I had another one sort of locked and loaded that was totally different.
Was it the same director?
No. Completely, totally different.
Okay.
Different genre, different people, all totally different. No relation whatsoever. No companion at all.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. next time.
I picked this movie just because it had the Porsche in it, which is, in this
case,
brief 924. But
yeah.
Anyway.
A little frivolous and whimsical, which is fine. We can do whatever we want on our picks.
Mm-hmm. As we prove time and time again.
As we get rubbed into our face over and over and over.
Well, I mean, this has been our best.
Yes, it's been a nice tonic. I feel flush with movie wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly some alcohol. I don't know.
All right. That's enough with the drink. I got to go think.
Ooh.
You got to go what?
Think.
Oh. I gotta go think.
Think about Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Indeed.
Gotta do our homework for this movie, that's for sure.
Yep.
Is it this one where he puts the grenade onto a arrow and shoots down the helicopter?
Your memory is slightly convoluted.
Okay.
You're in the right wheelhouse, but the details the details are all wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a couple. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it matches up further.
Yeah.
Vague memories. Well, are you saying watch the first one because that's gonna help the storyline?
Well, just because
no backstory.
First Blood is a pretty good movie. It's like it's just it like is. A good movie, and yes, there is some action in it, but it like it has a point of view that makes sense. It you know it's not over the top, and it's not. I mean, it's a little over the top, but it has something to say. There's a reason for it to exist.
Yeah,
and then this one just goes in a completely or it takes you know elements of the first one, strips away all the dramatic elements really, and then just like,
yeah,
you know, he goes. But anyway, my point being, if you know, it's a good, it's an interesting combination. I we'll get into it, but I'm not. I don't want to say too much, but
yeah.
as two movies, they're very different.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk about that, and we can talk about the tie-ins with. I mean, if it's the same year as Commando,
it is.
Yeah, so it's part of this arms race that we're...
Yeah, totally.
The 80s has created.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Until then, good listener.
Yes. Thanks for listening. That's the fun with your brains. The pirate thing is still throwing me.